I got into the elevator. Bernardo followed. You think I believe anything you say, witch? He hit the button that kept the doors open. Hate me if you want, but don't let her die. Your pet FBI agent kept me out of the big raid. I didn't know what he meant, but I was pretty sure who he meant. Whatever Bradley did, he did without me knowing, but that's not the point. I can make it the point. Did you hear that Dallas is in danger? Did you hear that part? I asked. She's as corrupt as you are. So it's okay that she dies a horrible death, I said. He just looked at me. I moved as if to go towards the buttons. Bernardo caught his clue. He hit Marks in the head with his cast. The man went down, and I hit the door close button. The doors hushed close as Bernardo lowered Marks to the floor.
You want me to kill him? Bernardo asked.
No. But now if I went to Ramirez for help, Marks would think he'd been in on it. Shit. Do you have Edward's car?
Yeah.
How did Olaf drive off then? Bernardo looked at me.
If he's really doing this, he'll steal a car and ditch it away from the murder scene. He won't chance using Edward's car.
He'll go back to Edward's house for his goodie bag, I said. The doors opened on the floor that he'd parked on. We got out.
What do you mean, goodie bag?
If he's going to cut her up, then he'll want the tools he normally uses. Serial murderers are very anal when it comes to how the victims are treated. They spend a lot of time planning exactly what they'll do and how.
So he's at Edward's?
How long has he been gone?
3 hours, maybe 3 and a half?
No, he'll be at Dallas's, if that's where he is at all. Bernardo opened the car and we got in. I had to take the Browning out of my pants. The barrel's just too long for sitting down like that. I ended up holding it in my lap. I watched Bernardo drive with his cast-wrapped arm. You need me to drive?
I'm fine. Just tell me where Dallas lives and I'll drive us.
Shit! He put the car in park and looked at me.
The police would know the address.
When Marks wakes up, we'll be lucky to stay out of jail, I said.
We don't even know that Olaf's at her house, he said.
I got a better one. How to explain that we know he was a serial murderer and didn't warn the police sooner. Do you have Edward's cell phone? I asked. He didn't argue, just leaned across and opened the glove compartment. I got the phone out.
Who are you going to call?
It's Papalotto. She'll know the address.
She'll eat Olaf's face.
Maybe. Maybe not. Either way, you better get us out of the parking area before Marks wakes up and starts screaming. He drove us out of the parking lot and started slowly down the street. I dialed information, and the operator was happy to dial the obsidian butterfly for me. It was daylight. I knew better than to ask for Itzpapalotl herself, so I asked for Pinotl and told them it was an emergency and it was Anita Blake. I think it was my name that got me through, as if they'd been expecting the call. Pinotl came on the line with his rich voice.
Anita, my mistress said you would call.
I was betting that she'd been wrong on the why, but... Pinotl, I need the address for Professor Dallas's house. Silence on the other end of the phone. She's in danger, Pinotl.
Then we will take care of it.
I'm going to have to call the police in on this, Pinotl. They'd shoot your were-jaguars on sight.
You are worried about our people?
He said. Give me the address and I'll take care of it for you, Pinotl. Silence except for his breathing. Tell your mistress thanks for her help, Pinotl. I know I'm alive now because she helped me.
You are not angry that she did not tell you all she knew?
She's a centuries-old vampire. They can't help themselves sometimes.
She is a goddess.
We're just arguing semantics, Pinotl. We both know what she is. Please, give me the address. He gave it to me. I read the directions to Bernardo, and off we went. Chapter 64. I called the police on the way. I made it an anonymous call, saying I'd heard screams. I hung up without giving my name. If Olaf wasn't there, then they'd scare the hell out of Dallas and I'd apologize. I'd even pay for any busted locks.
Why didn't you tell them the truth? Bernardo asked.
What? I think that some serial killer is there murdering her? And how do you know this, ma'am? Well, officer, you see, it's like this. I've known he was a serial killer for days now, but our mutual friend Ted Forrester had forbidden him from attacking women while he was here helping us solve the mutilation murders. You've heard of the mutilation murders. Who is this? It's Anita Blake, the vampire executioner. And what does an executioner know about serial murderers?
More than you'd think.
I looked at Bernardo.
All right, all right. they'd still be asking questions when we arrived at the house.
This way, they'll send an Albuquerque PD car there ASAP. They'll get there before we can even come close.
I didn't think you even liked Dallas when we met her.
It doesn't matter if I like her or not.
Yes, it does,
he said. If I don't like her, then we just let Olaf butcher her, is that it?
He saved your life. He saved mine. We don't owe this woman anything.
I looked at him, trying to read his face from just the profile. Are you saying that you won't back me on this, Bernardo? Because if you're not on my side on this, then I need to know, because if we go up against Olaf and you hesitate, then you're going to get yourself killed, and maybe me.
If I go in, I'll go in ready to kill him.
If? I said.
I owe him my life, Anita. While we were at Riker's, we saved each other's lives. We counted on each other and knew the other one would be there. I don't owe this Dallas chick anything.
Then stay in the car. A thought occurred to me. Or are you saying that you're on his side? Really, on his side? I had the Browning out in my hand already. I clicked the safety off and he heard it. I saw him stiffen.
Well, that's not fair. If I take my left hand off to pull a gun, then we wreck.
I didn't like the way the conversation was going, I said.
All I'm saying, Anita, is that if we can save Dallas and let Olaf get away, we should let him go. It'd make things even between us all.
If Dallas is unharmed, I'll think about it. That's the best I can do. But let me remind you, if you plan on killing me to help Olaf, that Edward is going to live. He'd hunt you both down, and you know it.
Hey, I never said anything about pulling down on you.
Just trying to test the limits of our misunderstanding, Bernardo, because trust me, you don't want me to misunderstand you.
There's no misunderstanding, Bernardo said,
and there was no teasing in his voice, just a dry seriousness that reminded me of Edward.
I think it's shitty to turn Olaf into the cops.
They'll already be there, Bernardo.
If there's only two uniforms, we can help him get away.
Are you talking about killing the policeman?
I didn't say that.
Don't. Don't go there, because not only will I not follow you, I'll bury you there.
For two cops you don't even know.
Yeah, for two cops I don't even know.
Why?
He said. I shook my head. Bernardo, if you have to ask that, you wouldn't understand the answer. He glanced at me.
Edward said that you were one of the best shooters he'd seen. Quick to kill. He said you only had two faults. You got too up close and personal with the monsters, and you thought too much like an honest cop.
An honest cop? I like that, I said.
I've seen you, Anita. You're as much a killer as Olaf or me. You're not a cop. You never were.
Whatever I am, we are not killing the cops on sight. If Dallas is unhurt, we'll discuss letting Olaf go, but if he's hurt her, then he pays. If you don't like the plan, then give up your weapons and wait in the car. I'll go in alone. Bernardo looked at me.
What's to keep me from lying to you, keeping my guns, and shooting you in the back?
You're more afraid of Edward than you are grateful to Olaf.
You know that for a fact, he said.
I know that Olaf has more rules of honor than you do. If you'd really felt all that damn grateful, you'd have said something before I called the cops. Being protective of Olaf wasn't your first thought, or your second, or even your third.
Edward said you were one of the most loyal people he'd ever met. So why aren't you protecting Olaf?
He preys on women, Bernardo. He preys on them not because he's paid to or owes them vengeance, but because that's what he does. He's like a vicious dog that keeps attacking people. Eventually, you have to put it down.
You're going in there planning to kill him, Bernardo said.
No, no, I'm not. Remember, if I kill either of you, I'll either owe Edward another favor, or I'll have to draw a gun on him and finally find out which of us is better. I don't think I'll survive the latter, and I have not had a good time honoring Edward's favor. I got a glimpse of his other life at Riker's place. I don't want to be in another firefight. It's not my cup of tea.
It's not anyone's cup of tea, Bernardo said. You just get used to it.
You don't get used to shit like that.
Like you don't get used to cutting out people's hearts? You did that like an old pro.
I shrugged. Practice makes perfect.
This is the street, Bernardo said.
The street had that just-past-dawn silence. The cars still sat unmoved in their driveways, but there were people standing in their driveways peering out at the marked police car that was sitting in front of Dallas's house. One of the doors was open, filling the quiet neighborhood with the radio squawk. The lights rotated pale and underdone like a child's toy in the heavy morning light.
Professor Dallas's house was a small ranch with those faux adobe walls that everyone was so fond of here. In the early morning light, it looked almost golden, as if it glowed. Bernardo parked by the road.
Well?
I asked.
I'm with you.
But before we could draw guns, the two uniforms came out of the house with Dallas in a robe. We sat there staring at her, smiling at the policemen while they apologized for bothering her. She looked up, noticed us. She looked puzzled, but waved at us.
Anita, look at the mailbox, Bernardo said.
Our car was almost right in front of the mailbox. There was a white envelope pinned to the front of the mailbox with a knife. My first name was printed in block letters on the front of the envelope. No one had noticed it yet but us. Edward's car was tall enough to hide it from the neighbors. Can you help me hide it from the cops?
My pleasure.
I got out of the car, leaving the Browning on the seat because I couldn't figure out a way to put it down my pants without the police noticing me doing it, and I didn't have any ID on me. I might be able to fake being a Fed, but then again, maybe not. And it's a federal offense to impersonate a federal agent. Bernardo and I had assaulted a police officer. We didn't need any more charges. Bernardo pulled the knife out, making the movement look natural. The envelope dropped into my hand, and I walked up to the house, hitting my thigh with the envelope, as if I'd carried it from the car. Neither of the cops yelled, "Halt, thief!" so I kept moving. I didn't know what Bernardo had done with the knife. It had just vanished. "Hi, Dallas. What's up?"
"Someone made a prank phone call about screams coming from my house."
"Who'd do such a dastardly thing?" Bernardo asked.
I frowned at him. He smiled at me, pleased with himself.
"Did you get a call, too?" she asked.
"I got it," Bernardo said. "They called Edward's cell phone, said you were in danger."
The uniform cops made the same mistake that the hospital staff had made. They introduced themselves by rank and name and shook hands. I said, "Anita Blake. This is Bernardo's spotted horse."
"He's not a..."
The policeman looked uncomfortable as soon as he started to say it.
"No, I'm not a federal agent," Bernardo said.
There was bitterness in his voice. "It's the hair," I said. "They've never seen a male agent with long hair."
"Sure, it was the hair."
The uniforms went off, leaving us at Dallas's doorstep in the morning light, with her curious neighbors coming out in dribs and drabs to see what was happening at an hour past dawn on the quiet street.
"Would you like to come inside? I already started coffee."
"Sure." Bernardo looked at me but followed me in. The kitchen was small, square, and neat, like one that wasn't used much. But it was cheerful in a blaze of morning sunlight.
"What's really going on, Anita?"
I sat down at her table and opened the envelope with my name on it. It was written in block letters.
"Anita, I knew that moment in the cave that you would think as I did. I felt that you would know where I would go to hunt. Now here you are. I am nearby."
That made me look up. He says he's nearby. Bernardo drew his gun. He stood and began to watch the windows. I went back to the note.
"I have watched you come to the good professor's rescue. I watched you take the envelope, and I know you are reading it now. I belittled Edward when he spoke of soulmates. I owe him an apology. When I saw you take the heart, so practiced, I knew that you were as I am. How many have you killed? How many hearts have you ripped out? How many heads have you taken? You'll argue with yourself that you are not as I am. Maybe you don't take trophies, but you still live for the kill, Anita. You would wither and die without the violence. What trick of fate has made you physically the woman I kill over and over again, and yet put inside that tiny body the other half of my soul? Are most of the vampires you kill men? Do you have your victim preference, Anita? I would love to hunt with you at my side. I would hunt your victims, because I know you will not hunt mine. But we would still kill together, and cut the bodies up, and that would be more than I ever dreamed of sharing with a woman."
The note wasn't signed. Big surprise there, since I might have given it to the police.
"You look pale," Dallas said.
"What does the note say?" Bernardo asked.
I handed it to him. "I don't think he's out there to kill us or even her."
"Who are you talking about?" she asked.
I told her, and she laughed at me. "You know I'm a vampire executioner."
"Yes?"
"I killed another vamp last night. One I think that It's Papalotl wanted me to kill. She helped me do it. That's the heart I took. Bernardo read faster than I would have thought.
Jesus, Anita. Olaf has a crush on you.
A crush, I said. A crush? God, there's gotta be another word for it. Dallas asked, can I read it? I think you should, because he didn't wait just to catch a glimpse of me. He waited because if I hadn't shown up, he'd have come in here and butchered you. She tried to laugh it off, but there must have been something in my face that choked the laughter and made her reach a shaking hand out for the letter. She read it and said, who is this? Olaf, I said. But he was so nice. Bernardo made a harsh sound. Trust me on this, Dallas. Olaf is not nice. She looked from one to the other of us. You're not kidding, are you? He's a serial killer. I just don't think he's ever killed in this country. You should turn him into the police, she said. I don't have any proof of what he's done.
Besides, Bernardo said, what if he was one of the vamps?
What do you mean? Dallas asked. He means, wouldn't you protect one of the vamps from the police because you'd know that the vamps would take care of it? I said. Well, yes, I guess.
And we'll take care of this, Bernardo said.
She looked from one to the other of us, and for the first time she looked afraid. Will he be back?
For you? I don't think so, Bernardo said.
He looked at me.
But I bet he'll find a reason to come to St. Louis.
I'd have liked to say he was wrong, but the cold, tight feeling in my stomach agreed with Bernardo. I'd be seeing Olaf again. I just had to decide what I'd do when I met him. He hadn't done anything wrong on this trip. Not only couldn't I prove he was a serial killer, he hadn't done anything worse than I'd done this time round. Who was I to throw stones? Yet, I hoped he stayed away from me. For more reasons than I wanted to admit, maybe. Maybe for the same reasons that I'd kill him if he came. Because maybe there was some truth to what he wrote. I had over 50 kills. What really separated me from people like Olaf? Motive? Method? If those were the only differences, then Olaf was right. And I couldn't let him be right. I just could not accept that. Growing up to be Edward was a problem. Growing up to be Olaf was a nightmare. Epilogue. Marks tried to press assault charges, but Bernardo and I said we didn't know what he was talking about. Dr. Evans said that his injuries were inconsistent with being hit by a person. It wouldn't have worked except that Marks was in the doghouse about how he'd handled the case. He was in on the press conference where the public was assured that the danger was over, but Ramirez was standing up there beside him, along with Agent Bradford. And me. They put Ted and Bernardo up there, too. We didn't get to answer questions, but we got our picture in the papers. I'd have rather not, but I knew it would please Bert, my boss, and they did print it in several national papers that I was Anita Blake of Animators, Inc. Bert loved it. Edward caught a secondary infection from something that had been smeared on the steak. He took a relapse and I stayed. Donna and I took turns sitting by his bed. Sitting by Becca's bed. It got to the point where the little girl cried when I left. Peter spent a lot of time playing games with her, trying to get her to smile. But his eyes had that hollow look you get when you're not sleeping well. He wouldn't talk to me or Donna. The only thing he'd admitted to her was the beating. He hadn't told her about the rape. I didn't betray his secret. First, I wasn't sure she could handle another shock. Second, it wasn't my secret to tell. Donna actually rose to the occasion. She was like this incredible pillar of strength for the kids, for Ted, even though he couldn't hear her talking to him. She never once turned to me in tears. It was like this new person had risen from the ashes of the person I'd first met. It saved me having to hurt her. 10 days after the accident, Edward was awake and talking. Out of danger. I could finally go home. When I told them I was finally going home, Donna hugged me tight and cried and said, "You have to tell the kids goodbye." I assured her I would, and she left us alone to say our goodbyes. I pulled the chair up to the bedside and studied his face. He was still pale, but he looked like Edward again. That cold bleakness was back in his eyes when no one but me was looking.
"What's wrong?" he asked.
"It couldn't just be because you nearly died," I said.
"No,"
he said. I smiled, but he didn't smile back.
"Bernardo came to see me, but Olaf never did," he said.
I realized then what he thought I'd waited around to tell him. You think I killed Olaf, and I've been waiting for you to get healthy enough to give you the same choice you gave me after Harley died. I laughed. Sweet Jesus, Edward.
You didn't kill him.
I watched him relax against his pillows, visibly relieved. No, I didn't kill him. He managed a faint smile.
It wouldn't have been the same choice. But if you'd killed Olaf, you wouldn't have wanted to owe me another favor.
You were afraid I'd press the point, make it the gunfight at the OK Corral.
Yes, he said.
I thought you wanted to see which of us was better.
I thought I was dying on the stairs. All I could think of was that Peter and Becca were going to die in there with me. Bernardo and Olaf were there, but you'd gone up the stairs and hadn't come back. When you came back around that corner, I knew you'd get the kids out. I knew you'd risk your life for theirs. Bernardo and Olaf would have tried, but the kids wouldn't have been their first priority. I knew they would be yours. When I passed out in the cave, I wasn't worried. I knew you'd see it right.
What are you saying, Edward?
I'm saying if you had killed Olaf, I'd have given you a pass on it because Peter and Becca mean more to me than that.
I took Olaf's letter out of my back pocket and handed it to him. He read it while I watched his face. Nothing moved but his eyes. He had no reaction.
He's a good man at your back, Anita.
You're not suggesting I date Olaf. He almost laughed.
No. Fuck no.
Stay as far away from him as you can. If he comes to St. Louis, kill him. Don't wait for him to deserve it. Just do it. I thought he was your friend.
Not friend. Business associate. It's not the same thing.
I agree someone needs to kill Olaf, but why are you so adamant all of a sudden? You trusted him enough to bring him here to your town.
Olaf has never had a girlfriend. He's had whores, and he's had victims. Maybe it's true love, but I think if he shows up and finds that you won't be his little serial killer pinup girl, that he'll turn violent. You don't want to know what he's like when he's violent, Anita. You really, really don't.
You're scared he'll come after me.
If he shows in town, call me.
I nodded.
I will.
I had other questions. Riker's house sprang a mysterious gas leak and blew to Kingdom Come. No survivors, no bodies, no evidence that we did shit, or that Riker and his men did shit. Was it Van Cleef?
Not him personally, Edward said.
You know the next question, I said.
I know,
he said. You're not going to tell me, are you?
I can't tell you, Anita. One of the conditions to leaving was to never talk about it with anyone. If I break that, they'll come after me.
I wouldn't tell anyone. He shook his head.
No, Anita. Trust me on this one. Ignorance is bliss.
That is incredibly frustrating, I said. He smiled.
I know, and I'm sorry.
No, you're not. You love keeping secrets.
Not this one, he said.
There was something close to sadness in his eyes, and for the first time I realized for sure that once there had been a kinder, gentler version of Edward. He hadn't been born this way. He'd been made like Frankenstein's monster. No answers, huh?
No,
he said. We stared at each other, but neither of us seemed impatient. Okay, I said.
Okay what?
He asked. I shrugged. You won't answer questions about your background, fine. Answer another one. Are you going to marry Donna?
If I say yes, what will you do?
I sighed. I was willing to kill you to keep you away from them when I got here. But what is love, Edward? You're willing to give up your life for the kids. You'd do the same for Donna. She's convinced you're her dream man. It's a good act. Becca told her what you did. What we did. Peter backed it. So in a way, they all three know what you are. Who you are. Donna's cool with it. I stopped talking.
Was there an answer to my question in there somewhere?
I won't do anything, Edward. You're willing to die for them. If that's not love, it's so close I can't tell the difference. He nodded.
Nice that I have your blessing.
You don't, I said. But I don't have room to throw stones at your personal life. So do whatever you want.
I will,
he said. Peter hasn't told Donna what happened to him. He needs therapy for it.
Why didn't you tell her?
It's not my secret to tell. Besides, you're his would-be stepfather, and you know. I trust you to do the right thing by him, Edward. If he doesn't want Donna to know, you'll find a way around it.
You're treating me like his father, Edward said.
How much did you see of what Peter did to Amanda?
Enough,
Edward said. He emptied the clip into her, Edward. He turned her face into spaghetti. The look in his face. I shook my head. He's more your son than Donna's, and has been since he blew away his father's killer when he was 8.
You think he's like me?
Like us, I said. Like us. I don't know if you can rebuild someone that got that broken that early. I'm not a psychiatrist. Healing people's not my job.
It's not mine either, he said.
I never thought you missed the pieces of yourself that you gave up to be who and what you are. But when I see you with Donna and Becca and Peter, I see regret in you. You wonder what life might have been like if you hadn't met Van Cleef or whoever the hell was first. He looked at me, eyes cold.
It took me a long time to understand what I saw in Donna. How did you know?
I shrugged. Maybe the same thing I thought I saw in Ramirez.
It's not too late for you, Anita.
It's too late for me to have the white picket fence, Edward. Maybe I can figure out something, but not that. It's too late for that.
You think I'll fail with Donna, he said.
I shook my head. I don't know. I just know it wouldn't work for me. I'm not the actor you are. Whoever I'm with has to know who I am, warts and all, or it won't work.
You know which monster you're going to settle down with?
No, but I know I can't keep hiding from them. Hiding from them is like hiding from who I am. I'm not going to do that anymore.
You think I'm running from myself by going with Donna?
No, I think you always embrace the monster part of you. You're finding for the first time that not all of you is dead as you wanted it to be. Donna appeals to a part of you that you didn't know was left.
Yes, he said. And what do Richard and Jean-Claude represent for you?
I don't know, but it's time I found out. He smiled, but it wasn't a happy smile.
Good luck.
The same to you, I said.
We're going to need it, he said.
I'd have liked to argue, but he was right. I did call Itz Papalotto before I left for home. She was disappointed that I didn't come in person, but not angry. I think she knew why I didn't want to shake hands again. She'd killed every minion of every rival vamp that crossed her path for 50 years, but me, she hadn't harmed a hair on my head. I thought she wanted the secret to the triumvirate, and that had interested her, but that hadn't been what saved me. She'd set me up to kill the Red Woman's husband. She'd given me the power to both attract him and withstand his charms. I'd been her bait and her weapon. Now the other god was dead, and I was leaving her territory before she decided that I'd outlived my usefulness. She extended an invitation to my master.
We could have much to discuss, your master and I.
I told her I'd pass along the invitation. I will, but they'll be ice skating in hell before I bring Jean-Claude down to meet Itz Papalotto.
She'd gobble him up.
Maybe Edward's right. Maybe Richard and I would survive Jean-Claude's death. But surviving his death and surviving whatever Itz Papalotto would do to him are two very different things. There are so many easier ways to kill Jean-Claude. Ways that would be less risky to Richard and me. I know that's what Edward wants me to do. Several of my friends are voting that way. But I get presidential veto, and I don't want him dead. I'm not sure what I do want, but I know I want him walking around so I can decide. I'm going home, and I'm going to start by seeing all the friends I've neglected for the past few months. So Ronnie is dating Richard's best friend. So what? She and I can still be friends. Catherine's had 2 years of honeymooning. Time I stopped using that as an excuse not to see her. I think I'm just uncomfortable with how terribly happy she is with a man that I found ordinary and a little boring. But she glows around him. I haven't done much glowing lately around either of my two men. I'm going to start seeing the werewolves in Richard's pack again, and Jean-Claude's vamps. First renew friendships, then if that works out okay, I'll see the boys. It's a cautious plan, nay, cowardly, but it's the best I can do. Okay, it's the best I'm willing to do. Because the truth is that I am no closer to a solution to my love life than I was when I broke off with them over a year ago. The few times I fell off the celibacy wagon don't count because I was still trying to avoid them. I don't want to avoid them. I just want to know what exactly it is that I do want. Once I figure out what I want, who I want, the next question is, can I have who I want, or will the loser pull our little house down around us in bloody ruins? I would say it's the $64,000 question, but Richard and Jean-Claude are worth so much more than that to me. Maybe Ramirez is right. Maybe if I truly loved one of them, the choice would be easy.
Or maybe Ramirez doesn't know what the hell he's talking about.
Edward loves Donna and Peter and Becca. They're all seeing a therapist together, but I think Peter is still lying about what really happened. You can't get good therapy if you lie to your therapist. But I think Peter is counting on Edward to be his therapist. Scary thought, isn't it? Edward loves Donna. Do I love Richard? Yes. Do I love Jean-Claude? Maybe. If it's really yes for Richard, and maybe for Jean-Claude, then why don't I have my answer? Because maybe, just maybe, there is no one right answer. I'm beginning to worry that whatever I decide, I will be left mourning the one that got away. Once I'd been afraid if I chose Richard that Jean-Claude would kill him rather than share me. But strangely, the vampire seems willing to share, and Richard isn't. Maybe Jean-Claude loves the power of the triumvirate more than he loves me. Or maybe Richard is just jealous. I certainly wouldn't share either of them with another woman. Fair is fair. Which brings me back to the original question. Who is the love of my life? Maybe I don't have one. Maybe it's not love at all. But if it's not love, then what is it? I wish I knew.
This is Kimberly Alexis. We hope that you've enjoyed this production of Obsidian Butterfly. This program was executive produced by Patty Peruse and produced and directed by Kevin Thompson. Obsidian Butterfly is a production of Penguin Audio, a member of Penguin Group USA, Inc. Copyright 2010, all rights reserved. The book, Obsidian Butterfly, is available wherever Berkeley books are sold.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.